Today we are in deep grief for so many reasons. The most obvious being our care and concern for the folks in Newtown, Connecticut. It can feel helpless to be so far away, way away on the other side of the continent. Yet we are with them. We have other grief as well. It's layered, layer upon layer. The very first Sunday that I stood behind this pulpit and preached to you was the very week of the shooting at Columbine, the very place from where I had come, the congregation that was part of my internship where it had been served, and the neighborhood where my three children's father still lives, just down the street from the main entrance to that school. I know well how grief works, how it can impact a community, how it gouges out its cuts to leave scars upon us. I remember that particular Sunday, my first one here with you, people saying to me and just out loud to others, "But that wouldn't happen here." Trying to imagine what the place that was my home must be like. This past Friday, I heard the same incredulous expressions from residents of Sandy Hook, of that bucolic wooded village where the elementary school has a sweet little New England swinging white wooden sign hanging on a square-edged post saying, "Visitors welcome." These are the days where the lists of places of mass gun violence are 8 deep. 8. Just since April of this year. We know well that gun violence isn't limited to one town or one kind of place or one kind of neighborhood, or that it only affects the marginalized. I really don't mean to speak hyperbolically when I say that I believe that we all have some sort of post-traumatic stress. After so many of these events, how could we not? Still, we've got a number of sources of support for today, all of which to me feel like some measure of comfort. At the center of the circle, we hold close our children with ceremony and ritual, an honoring of their importance in this community. I know how good it felt to already have that photo chosen for the cover of our bulletin, with the cute little rear end sticking up in the air. We encircle our children with today's Advent theme of love. Love with a capital L. Not only our love, but divine love. And finally, the last stanza of a poem that comes actually from Cecil Day Lewis, that comes out of the child dedication reading that I love so much, where he says, "We time-worn folk who are renewed again by the precious springs that well up from our children." In other words, we can find comfort in the preciousness that our children bring to our lives. I've noticed, of course, you know I'm on social media, and that the wisdom of Mr. Rogers has been of solace to many this weekend. This lesson that I read was attributed to him. "When I was a boy," it said in this quote, "I would see scary things in the news. My mother would say to me, 'Look for the helpers. You will always find people who are helping.' To this day, Mr. Rogers goes on, especially in times of disaster. I remember my mother's words, and I am always comforted by realizing that there are still so many helpers, so many caring people in the world. It seems not surprising to me then that Fred Rogers was an ordained Presbyterian minister. There are caring people in this world who reach out to help and lead the most vulnerable among us, namely our children. And the helpers do all they can to create a safe and just world. And then there are those of us who help the helpers to stand as allies, to know that justice and action can be of wise help. That as our UUA president, Reverend Peter Morales, shared, we must rededicate ourselves to creating a society where differences are resolved without violence, where the mentally unstable do not have ready access to lethal force, where violence is not glorified, and where we can live, love, and work in safe places. Our task as a religious people committed to compassion and to peace is to show a better way. We time-worn folk are called upon for a lot, to be the protection for the youngest, the most vulnerable, for the mentally unstable. We are called upon to make the hard choices, the unpopular ones, at many times to be a corrective in the world. Marriott Wright Edelman suggests it as what she calls compassionate action. Our grief today is also in part the grief that comes from the more fine grooves that have been cut into our lives, the ones that leave the crick in our neck and the ache in our back, the twinge in our heart, and the painful poke in our solar plexus. It's that part that wisdom has given us in our status as veterans of this life. We have veteran status. At some point, we must come to spiritual maturity to learn to hold in common some things. Frustration for injustice, and at the same time, a sense of gratitude for what is. Secondly, the busyness surrounding us and an ability to be a container for peace. And thirdly, the great joy of birth and an appreciation for the sagacity of aging. I know I might sound like a broken record when suggesting another spiritual practice, but Zen Buddhist priest Lewis Richmond suggests aging as a spiritual practice. Seriously, he wrote a whole book. It's not that hard in a way. It comes when hitting the acknowledgement that this is my life, I have no other. The Dharma of Buddhism offers the perfect antidote, I think, to the attempt to hang on to something that is no longer there. We can reach out for a lot of things in an attempt to avoid time, but the principle of letting go and looking at our fears actually gives us a sense of peace. I love this meta prayer that's suggested by Lewis Richmond to begin a day of meditation. Seems like it could work for any, but today would be a good place to start. It goes like this. As I grow older, may I be kind to myself. As I grow older, may I accept joy and sorrow. As I grow older, may I be happy and at peace. He asks us to sit for a while in meditation Then later in the day, he asks us to expand the prayer. So we return to it. As everything ages and passes away, may each of us be kind to ourselves. As everything ages and passes away, may each of us accept joy and sorrow. As everything ages and passes away, may each of us be happy and at peace. On Friday morning, after learning of this latest horrific violence, I began to cry. I thought of those young families, the parents looking for their children, the school kids having to be frightened of something that even the adults didn't understand. Then a bit later, I found myself getting angry about guns, about a culture of violence, about cuts in budgets that would be there to provide for those struggling. And by the late afternoon, I had turned to naming the many things on my gratitude list. When I made that list, of course, I listed my children and my husband. But then I lifted up this green sheet of paper with our children's names and birth dates, and I felt an even deeper sense of peace. When I considered that their parents trusted us enough to bring them here, I felt humbled. When I thought of the congregation holding them in a covenant of love and care, I felt appreciation for the many gifts of this tradition, the long history of this faith, and the loving kindness of the holy, all that any of us consider to be ultimate. The President of the United States called upon the ancient words of the sacred text that assures that God heals the brokenhearted and binds up their wounds. We must do this for each other too. Bring healing and wholeness where we can. Wrap the wounds with the fastening ties of love. We shout our whys up at the sky. We construct untold attempts at solutions. We search prayers and poems for words, for orders of words to serve as soothing balm. But we know that connection with each other, with making and finding meaning, with honoring our precious lives, and sharing them with each other, with lighting candles for our grief and our joy, simply being together makes the world a better place. Kim Beach says, and I use his words in our child dedication, "New life has a story to tell, and we shall listen." We time-worn folk would do well to listen to new life, how it challenges us to look at our old ways, to renew ourselves with beauty, with energy, with hope for the future, with candles lit for peace, with a reminder that love is stronger than hate, that despite our new wounds, our old scars, and our time-weary hearts, that joy will come again. Joy will come again. Harlem-born poet June Jordan gives we elders some advice. To rescue our children, we will have to let them save us from the power we embody. we will have to trust the very difference that they forever personify. And we will have to allow them the choice, without fear of death, that they may come and do likewise, or that they may come and that we will follow them, that a little child will lead us back to the child we will always be, vulnerable and wanting and hurting for love and for beauty. May it be so. Blessed be. Amen.